Then gets a bonus in the capital budget, who's ever absent, sorry about that. We have just a brief announcement today. As all of you know, the subcommittees are starting to close out. We're going to be scheduling two of the subcommittees for Tuesday, March the 2nd, to give their presentations before the full finance committee. So at this time, we have tentatively set the two is the agencies, is administration, and the Department of Military and Veterans Affairs. And I'll be checking with the rest of the chairman then to schedule their time for presentations within the next 10 to 14 days, which will mean then that all subcommittees should be scheduling their closeout so that they can meet a date here for their presentation to the Finance Committee. But next Tuesday, we'll have our first two. Okay, today we have two pieces of legislation before us. The first one is House Joint Resolution number 11. It was originally referred to the State Affairs, Judiciary, and Finance Committee. It has so far passed out of State Affairs with 5 due pass and 1 no rec. It passed out of Judiciary with 4 due pass, 1 do not pass, and 1 no rec. And HDR 11 would allow the legislature to repeal regulations adopted by a state department or agency by a joint resolution, and a proposed amendment would be placed on the ballot at the next general election. Do we have anyone here who wishes to be heard on HDR number 11?
Mr. Chairman, for the record, I'm Sandy Nussbaum, staff to Representative Gail Phillips. I apologize, Mr. Chairman, Representative Phillips, because of the lateness in the hour, had to go down and attend a Judiciary Committee meeting. I'd like to have staff pass something out that came to our attention last night that is a bit exciting and a bit different. As you know, the Attorney General has been adamantly opposed to this legislation from the very beginning. However, we find it very ironic that the present Lieutenant Governor, who was an esteemed member of the Constitutional Convention, introduced this measure during the 16th legislature. Late last night, the Lieutenant Governor formally endorsed the resolution, and that's the copies of the endorsement that I'm passing out at this time. I think all of you have heard the reasons why, but if you might let me go through real quick and give Representative Phillips' statement, I'd appreciate that. This joint resolution is a proposal to place a constitutional amendment before the voters of the state of Alaska on the 1994 general election ballot. The amendment would permit the legislature to take action on regulations they felt that may not properly implement the intent of the laws passed by the legislature. Annulment of regulations by resolution was authorized by the first state legislature in 1959. However, in 1980, the Supreme Court ruled in a 3-2 decision that the Constitution permits the legislature to annul a regulation by passing a bill. A bill passed by the legislature annulling a regulation could be vetoed by the governor. A resolution could not. Adoption of a joint resolution annulling a regulation requires approval by a majority vote of the membership of each body of the legislature. While many regulations do conform to and support the laws passed by the legislature, there is ever-increasing evidence that regulations which are imposed on the citizens of this state go far beyond conforming with the laws passed by the legislature, many times ignoring the legislative directive or going beyond the limits of what the legislature intended. Mr. Chairman, one of the things I have tried to point out, and Representative Phillips has tried to point out to legislative members, any member that has ever had a piece of legislation become law in this state should go back and check the regulations and see what is put into place to implement this bill. And I think you might be very, very surprised. In some cases, pleased, in some cases, not pleased. Once the regulations go into effect, they have all the force of law, even though no single person elected by the voters has approved them. I firmly believe that the framers of our state constitution never intended that ever any governmental body except the legislature have the power to make laws. Mr. Chairman, in addition, originally when the reg review process was put into place, it was called P&P, Policies and Procedures, and it was exactly that, to put a procedure in place that would be able to be worked through with the agency to cover the law that was put into place. Now we're finding that the regulations that go in place are actually the last voice of the Department of Law, not the agency, and how the agency feels that they can operate. The Alaska Constitution provides a system of checks and balances among the three branches of government and further provides the people of Alaska their own checks and balances through the voting booth, the initiative process, and the final authority over amendments to the Constitution. The only area that is not currently accessible to the people's checks and balances is the volume of administrative regulations which are proposed by state agencies in the executive branch of government. They are written by the Department of Government, and they affect every aspect of these people's lives, yet they are powerless to change them. This measure would provide a reasonable avenue for annulment of improper regulations. This has been before the legislature before. It passed the Senate last 2 years ago unanimously, was reported out of both House State Affairs and House Judiciary Committees last year with unanimous new pass recommendations, received an endorsement from the Joint House and Senate Committee on Administrative Regulation Review. However, it failed to come to a full vote of the House just minutes before adjournment. In your files, you'll find back materials. They include a chart indicating the results of each time this proposal has been before the voters, as well as copies of the ballot measure. One of the things I find, Mr. Chairman, going back and reviewing this in the past three times it has been on the ballot, my former senator had this measure passed the last time that went on the ballot. He was never contacted to write the proposing statement that went in the election pamphlet. Another member of the legislature was. And going back to the second time it was on the ballot, I was working with the legislature at that time and fully was aware of what this meant. And when I read the statement, I would have voted against it, even though I knew what it was talking about. Representative Phillips is committed to working very closely with the Lieutenant Governor's Office and the Division of Elections to see that we put on a good campaign and that the average person understands what they're voting about and understand what the proposition is. If there's any questions, I'd be happy to answer them.
Does anyone have any questions of Ms. Nussbaum? No,
thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Do we have anyone else who'd like to be heard? HJR 11. Seeing none, what does the committee wish?
Mr. Chairman.
Yes, Chairman McLean.
I'd like to make a motion to move HJR 11 out of committee with individual recommendations.
Any discussion? Any objections? Hearing none, then so ordered. The last piece of business we have today is Executive Order 85. Executive Order 85 was originally referred to the State Affairs, Resource, and Finance Committee. In State Affairs, it had five due passes, one new rec. In the Resource Committee, it was five due passes and three no recs with a letter of intent. And Executive Order 85 moves the bonding program that serves as security for the collection of wages and payments for raw fish from the Department of Labor to the Department of Revenue. Do we have anyone who wishes to testify on Executive Order 85? Mr. Usera.
Mr. Chairman, for the record, my name is Vincent Usera. I'm with the Attorney General's Office. I understood there were some questions concerning Executive Order 85, and I'm here to answer them.
Okay. Does any member of the committee have any questions in regards to this executive order? Representative Hoffman.
The problem that I have, Mr. Chairman, is that the requirements for fish process bonding are not part of the executive order. And by not making it part of the executive order, it's not a requirement of law. And I felt strongly that the fishermen out there should be protected, and it should not be up to the whim of the administration to institute the bonding requirements by regulation. I think that they were put in there by law and should continue to be a requirement and not something that is taken up at the whim of the administration.
Mr. Usera?
Mr. Chairman, the executive order contains all of the law that's presently in place save for one provision. That provision being section 16... AS 16-10-292. And that provision was taken out in order to conform the the law to reason, actually. All that provision requires is that the Department of Labor provide the Department of Revenue with certification that the bonding had been accomplished. Excuse me. For that to remain with the Department of Revenue would be revenue certifying to itself, something like sending yourself a letter to tell you that you just paid a bill. It's just not necessary.
Further discussions, Representative Hoffman?
Well, it may not be necessary for the administration, but I feel it's necessary for the protection of the fishermen that are out there. And I don't see where there would be any provisions that the fishermen would be protected unless it was included.
Can you give Representative Hoffman some assurance there?
The fishermen are protected by the bonding program. The only thing that was left out was the provision that the Department of Labor certified to the Department of Revenue that the bond had been posted. And it's just totally unnecessary now.
The bonding requirements are still there?
The bonding requirements are still there. No other change.
Representative Gusendorf?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. In looking at the statutes as they now read under the Department of Labor and putting it into Executive Order 85, we notice that Section 1610.292, filing evidence of compliance, is not in this executive order. Is the assumption that you already have, the Department of Revenue already has an ability to handle that?
The Department of Revenue would know because the bond would have to be posted with the Department of Revenue. The rationale, as I understand it, for that section when it was originally enacted was because labor and revenue have to communicate with each other, that labor would then tell revenue that these bonds had been posted. Now that the entire program is under the aegis of revenue, it's just not necessary.
On the definitions, you added all three new parts, restaurants, groceries, grocery stores. Is there any other new changes there? How about fish markets? Is that a new definition?
I don't believe so.
No, Mr. Chairman, I don't have. I'm not. I just wondered what else is new that was not in the
executive. Well, an executive order can't do anything new. Mm-hmm. It can only make a conforming amendment, and that's the reason for the dropping of Section 292.
Well, Mr. Chairman, we just got done dealing with piece of legislation, a resolution dealing with being able to deal with regs, and I'm just wondering when you're talking about new definitions where that may lead us. But you're saying that there's what is in what Labor and Commerce had minus the compliance notice because revenue would then notify. Are there any other changes?
No other changes.
Representative Brown.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I guess my reading of our legislative council's opinion is it doesn't go to the notification but to prescribing the form in which the bond is posted. The statute now expressly allows the Commissioner of Labor to prescribe the form by which a fish processor demonstrates compliance, and there are a number of forms that could take, and it seemed to our council that was a substantive change in the law, and therefore I contend that this is not an appropriate executive order because it does make a substantive change in the law.
Well, there's no doubt that Section 292, as it presently stands, is substantive. However, in making the change, turning the program over to revenue from labor, there's no need for that certification process. It would seem a little...
Can I ask why would there not be a continuing need for the certification?
Because the bond has to be posted with revenue. Revenue would know.
But the prescription of the form of the bond...
It somehow didn't make sense to have the Department of Labor prescribing a form for the Department of Revenue, and especially a form that isn't needed to begin with. Now, I think the bottom line in Legislative Council's letter is that there is no practical effect to the dropping of that provision from the bill.
Well, Mr. Chairman, as I recall, the last testimony we had from the Department of Revenue wasn't that it wasn't needed, but was they absolutely intended to do it by regulation. And if you read 292, it doesn't deal with, it deals with the form of that the bond is in, and that is a substantive thing. And if it isn't specified somewhere, you could have it adopted. As you just said, it's not necessary, so, you know, that this gives us less confidence than we had before that it was going to be implemented in a way that would protect the fishermen.
Well, I think the entire bonding program, the intent of the program is to protect the fishermen. That would not change when revenue takes over the process. The process still would have to post a bond. It would be held by revenue and be used to pay the claims that were made.
But would any bond be, if the form of the bond is not specified, it would be up to the processor to turn in whatever form they felt was okay?
It's been a while since I've drafted this, but and the form of the bond may be maybe something that the regulations could cover if necessary. I think there may be confusion over the use of the word form. As it's used in Section 292, it means a piece of paper, a blank that's filled in. It doesn't have to do with the type of bond that would be required, whether it be a cash bond or...
Well, Mr. Chairman, the memo we have before us indicates that's exactly what it deals with. The council says, this provision, referring to the provision we're discussing, is beneficial because there are a couple of ways in which a processor may comply with the bonding requirement. A fish processor may comply with the bonding requirement by posting a surety bond, by having adequate lienable property in the state, or by not purchasing fish and not hiring employees. So our council interprets it as dealing with the form and substance of the bond.
I respectfully disagree. There's nothing changed. He makes cites in that letter to 1610-290A, 1610-290C, and 1610-293A, all of which are moved with in toto with the program.
But you're not contending, are you, that the form prescribed by the commissioner, which our council says is a substantive change, that you're not saying that it's part of the executive order?
It's not part of the executive order.
Thank you.
Okay, Representative Hanley?
Yeah, I'm a little bit, I've got 1610-292 here, and I understand what you're saying, Representative Brown. I'm not as, it says a fish processor or primary fish buyer subject to the statute shall initially file evidence of compliance with the bonding requirements in the form prescribed by the commissioner. So the intent is that they show that they have complied with the bonds.
And, Mr. Chairman, going on, that's the part that's missing. The form prescribed by the commissioner is the part that is missing from the executive order.
But my understanding from I was under that impression before, but as I read it, I mean, they are just, what they're being asked to do is show that they have bonds. The actual bonds are another form. In other words, this says, shall initially file evidence of compliance in the form prescribed. So that they're just trying to certify that, yes, we have actually complied with the bonding requirements. Not that there's a whole separate, I mean, I guess there's a checkoff form that says, yes, I have, here's my bond, and it's filed somewhere else. I can kind of see what they're saying, in that if they no longer have to verify that to the Department of Revenue, that the form is the form or the piece of paper. As I read this, anyway, I haven't got that legal opinion that you're reading on. So.
Well, just to continue this discussion, I think the form of a bond is significant because you could have a bond that had a really quick expiration date. I mean, there are a lot of things about why the person administering the program should be able to say what is an acceptable bond or not. And that's what I read our council is saying, is they've left out a big piece of the authority that's now in the statute for the people who administer the program to say, you know, not just that they filed something, but that it was in the proper form and substantively achieved the objective. And for that reason, Mr. Chairman, I'd like to move that we introduce a resolution disapproving Executive Order 85.
Before we accept the motion on that, is there further discussion?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. I would have to respectfully disagree with the previous speaker, because also under this legal research done, it states specifically that I must further conclude that the elimination of AS 1610-292 has no practical effect on the ability of the Commissioner of Revenue to enforce the fish processor bonding requirements. And then I'll just skip a sentence. The Commissioner may adopt regulations that are reasonably necessary to specify the manner and form by which a fish processor demonstrates compliance with the bonding requirements. They have to comply with the bonding requirements anyway within the Department of Revenue. I mean, they're there.
No.
Representative Brown?
Well, I think there's two issues. One is revenue does have the authority. This gentleman is advising us that he doesn't think it's necessary for revenue to implement that authority, which, as Representative Hoffman was saying, he feels that it is necessary. But that's one issue. Will revenue actually do it and prescribe the form? And then the second issue is just creeping encroachment on interpretation of what the legislature has passed. And for the executive to decide that, well, gee, you know, we just don't really agree with this, and even though it's a substantive change, we're going to do it anyway, even though that's not provided what you're supposed to do in an executive order. So I think those are really the issues. It would be discretionary. You know, revenue could do it, but they wouldn't have to do it. And that's, you know, what the concern is.
If I may, Mr. Chairman, the word form modifies evidence, not the bond. It refers to the form of evidence by which labor will certify to revenue that the bonding requirements, that is, the physical bond itself, is in place. If the program is moved to revenue, there's really no need for revenue to certify to itself in any shape that the fisherman has posted, or the processor, rather, has posted the required bond. The essential element here is the word form modifies evidence, not the bond itself.
Further discussion, Chairman McLean?
Yes, what is the whole intent of this executive order?
Of the executive order?
Mm-hmm.
To move a program that is presently housed at the Labor Department to the Department of Revenue, which currently maintains a very similar program in the licensing requirements. Mm-hmm. And it does not seem efficient to have two separate departments of the government doing something that one department could do more efficiently, because revenue does the exact same things for other forms of fishing licenses.
Thank you.
Any further discussion?
Well, I just note,
Representative Brown,
Mr. Chairman, that the previous committee that considered this felt that approval of this in no way implied approval of violation of the legal parameters of executive orders, nor should it be construed to mean that any inappropriate substantive changes proposed by executive order in the future will be accepted. And I guess it just seems to me that we need to, the last committee that I presume relying on the opinion of our legal counsel felt that there was something here that wasn't proper. It's not in proper form. And here we are, we just considered this bill, or the resolution that we just considered immediately a moment ago, dealing with how our laws are interpreted and trying to assert greater opportunity or authority for the legislature as the laws are carried out. And here we're just, you know, going in the opposite direction. And if anybody thinks that a letter of intent like this has any weight at all, I just say think again. And if you really want to make the point that when there is a substantive change required, the appropriate course of action is to file a bill and let's discuss it, rather than to get into the habit, and I would say this isn't the only executive order that's come before this committee that had this same flaw, that this is not a good trend that we want to encourage. It's not a big deal one way or the other that I can see whether this executive order goes through or not. So if we're looking for a place to make the point, I'd say this isn't a bad place to make that point, and we're, you know, sticking up for the legislative jurisdiction. According to our legal counsel, these people are over the line.
Further discussion? Thank you, sir.
Mr. Chairman.
So we have an executive order before us. We have many options. We can pass it from committee with individual recommendations. We can hold it in committee and do nothing. Or we could try to do something between the two. However, it is a executive order, and any discussion on what the committee would like to do with this?
Chairman.
Representative Purnell.
Just from a practical standpoint, I don't know that it's a good idea to hold it in committee and just let it go into effect without. I have to beg to differ with Representative Brown, because if there is any ambiguity in the executive order, which is construed by a court later, the court's going to look at the legislative intent and history behind it. And I would suggest that we move it from committee with similar language as was used by the Resources Committee. I have similar concerns to Representative Brown, but I don't want to start a trend here, even if we are going to pass this one out. I don't think passing it out starts a trend if we demonstrate our intent.
When you say similar language, do you mean to change similar language within the executive order?
No, no. The intent language signed by Representative Bill Williams, the language that says the House Resources Committee would like to state for the record that its approval of Executive Order 85 in no way implies approval of violation of the legal parameters of executive orders, nor should it be construed to mean that any inappropriate substantive changes proposed by executive orders in the future will be accepted. That's the last paragraph of Representative Williams' letter.
Okay, what does the committee wish? Representative Wiesner?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Being an executive order is the type of thing that the clock ticks on. If we take inaction, it goes into effect. I'd be hesitant about us moving it out today, giving some people a little bit of time to look at it a little bit closer and maybe determine whether or not this committee wants to come up with a resolution counter to the proposal. So this at least gives this committee a little bit of time before we go on a record, one way or the other of it, when we have a few people that want to take a look at it. So for those that support the Executive Order 85, by holding it, doesn't hurt, but also it keeps some people from going on record at this point when maybe there might be a few things we could work out or think about.
Representative Purnell?
What's our timeline, Mr. Chairman?
60 days.
No, but I mean,
do we have the
when
time?
Does it expire? When does the time expire?
Do we have the timeline when?
60 days. Order 11.
From which day?
From the date of introduction, which would be the first day of session.
Mark 11. In this executive order, where is it at in the other body?
I honestly don't know.
Any further discussion?
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Brown?
I made a motion.
I didn't accept it. If you care to remake it, that's
fine. Oh, you
fine.
Didn't accept it?
No, we weren't through with the discussion.
Oh, okay.
No, you can remake it now if you wish.
Okay.
I didn't accept it because we weren't through with the discussion in regards to the questions that committee members had.
Chairman, before Representative is replaces her motion, I still think it'd be a good idea to hold it for a day or two to for Representative Brown to figure out whether or not that indeed is a motion to introduce a resolution counter to the executive order. Otherwise, if she places her motion back before us here, it may be kind of messy and awkward because there's still so much looking at it.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman, I'm not telling Representative Brown not to make the motion, but I'm just saying that.
I was going to say another alternative that we have, and I just talked to Representative Hanley to chair a Finance Committee subcommittee that would consist of Representative Hanley, Representative Parnell, and Representative Brown, and it'd be brought back to your discretion. Do we have anything else to come before the committee today? Anything else? Hearing none, then the meeting adjourned.
Thanks, Mike.